disruption isn't something to fear. It's an opportunity to thrive. In episode 4 of this season of Zafin Banking Blueprints, we're diving deep into the world of customer experience in the financial services industry. Our host, Dharmesh Mistry, is joined by Chad Hamblin, Global Industry Director of Financial Services at Microsoft, and Chris Dickin, EVP Global Partner Strategy at Zafin, to explore how banks can thrive in an era of digital disruption. They're discussing why personalized experiences are more important than ever, how fintechs and traditional banks can work together, and the exciting potential of generative AI to revolutionize banking. We hope you enjoyed the episode as Chad and Chris discuss the secrets to building lasting customer relationships and explore how empowering employees can lead to happier customers.
Welcome, everybody, to Zafin's Banking Blueprints podcast. And in this episode, I have two very esteemed guests. I have Chad Hamblin from Microsoft, and I have Chris Dickin from Zafin. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Dharmesh.
Chad, can I ask you to introduce yourself and your role within Microsoft, please?
Sure, thank you. Yes, I am part of Microsoft. I am part of the worldwide financial services industry team. I am director focused on banking. One of the areas that I happen to focus on is customer experience, but also focus on retail banking as a broader vertical and also employee experience as well.
Chris, over to you. Can you introduce yourself and your role?
Absolutely, Dharmesh. Good to see you again. My name is Chris. I lead the global partner strategy here at Zafin. So this is everything to do with Zafin's partners, inclusive of Microsoft and other system integrators, the advisories, the different core providers, etc. So this is all about how do we go to market indirectly together with those partners.
Brilliant. I mean, this is a really interesting podcast for me because we're going to talk about customer experience. There's a lot of confusion about it. Still, I think, you know, everyone talks about how important it is. Everyone's got an opinion on customer experience. But I still think that there's kind of confusion. So maybe to help demystify some of that confusion, Chad, can you give us your definition of what customer experience actually is?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, everyone probably has their own definition. So I don't profess to sit here and have the only definition. But I think, you know, from a layman's standpoint, customer experience is really the lasting impression and image that a customer has of the different interactions that they have with a company across the different channels that they may offer, right? So at the end of the day, whether they're talking to them in the contact center or going into the branch or, you know, using online banking or exchanging emails or texts, whatever it may be, all of those things kind of constitute a broader customer experience that that customer associates with that organization, right? So it's really about the customer journey and all the different interactions that are taking place with that place of business and the customer.
And so I guess that is important, but why is it so much more important now than before, do you think?
Yes, I'm going to actually share one thought here and I'll let Chris chime in. I actually think I'm going to talk about why I think it's even more important in financial services as opposed to other industries. And I'll kind of come back and talk about maybe the now versus before piece. But in financial services, as many people know, it's primarily a services-based business. So different from automotive, where you have, you know, very clear differentiators in a car, or pharmaceuticals, where you may have a different kind of patent and pharmaceutical makeup, or, you know, high tech, where you can create kind of the world's best computer or software. You can differentiate on products in many cases in other industries. But when you think about financial services, a lot of the financial products and services that firms offer are very similar in that they, you know, there's a 30-year mortgage, there's a savings product, there is, you know, a checking product, there are financial, more investment products. Yes, there may be some variances across those different financial products amongst the different institutions, but by and large, the core construct, the core product, the core offering is very similar in nature. And so because of that, it becomes more difficult for financial service firms to differentiate on product alone. But one of the areas they really can differentiate on is that kind of unique customer experience. So that's, first of all, why I think it's really important for financial services. And then in terms of why it's even more important now than compared to before, I think COVID really kind of put everything in perspective for a lot of people. And it also made a lot of the banks find out that they have to really be creative in how they interact with the customers. They need to give the customers the convenience that they're asking for, because during COVID, maybe people couldn't walk into a branch or maybe, you know, interact in the ways they previously had. And so it really forced banks to realize that, wow, they have to offer this kind of holistic customer experience across all the different channels. And they need to do it in a way that's more personalized and more kind of relevant. And even, and I think part of the reason why it's even more important now than, say, even 5 or 10 years ago, is you have a lot of these online businesses like Amazon, et cetera, that are giving that kind of personalized instant gratification experience. And so now customers have higher expectations of what they want from banking firms. So I think it's a confluence of a couple of different things. One, in terms of kind of COVID being a little bit of a reset. Two, financial services being a much more of a kind of similar product, you know, industry where you can't just differentiate in product alone. And then three, you have a lot of the kind of more art of convenience organizations like Amazon that are giving customers that kind of instant experience that they now expect in other industries.
Brilliant, Chad. I love the summary, because I was just about to do that, but you've done it for me, which is great. Chris, I mean, what's your perspective on, you know, the importance of customer experience?
I think, guys, Chad, you did an amazing job there to summarize a lot of what's going on in the industry. The only thing that I would add, as some of the, I think, the audience have come to know me, I've come mostly from the digital banking side of the equation of the bank, right? So more the front end, spending a number of years doing that, until at one point I came to the realization that the digital front end, which essentially is what banks have been working on for, say, maybe the last decade, didn't include a key component of the full UX, if you like, of the full customer experience. And that missing component was the customization at the and personalization at the customer level of the product and price for them. So at the end of the day, what a bank sells and puts on the shelf is its product and the price associated, or the proposition associated and the price associated with it. But if you look at what's going on in the industry, it has been down a path, or is going down a path, of commoditization of the banking products. At the end of the day, a loan is a loan. There really is no much differentiation than that, besides maybe the price. And so if banks want to bring a more holistic view to what UX should be or is, it's not just about the front end and making a pretty shelf and a storefront for that. You really need to put an innovative product on the shelf. And I think that's the wave post-COVID, or during COVID, that we are seeing now happen. And it's driving an interesting set of dynamics within the banking industry, right? That this new wave is the competition for product on the front end for banks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think as Chad kind of highlighted, that there isn't a physical product in financial services as such. So it really is a virtual business in effect, and the products are virtual, right? Yeah. So it's absolutely geared up for digital delivery. Yet, it's been amazing that fintechs have kind of innovated on the customer experience and banks have kind of had to follow them. But actually what's really happened, you know, is that it's easy to copy, you know, a change in the screen flow or a simplification of the screen flow, but it's much harder to pitch the right product at the right time for the customer. Is that where you're heading, Chris, as the overall compelling experience for, you know, part of customer experience?
You're bang on. You, like, literally what has happened over the last decade is fintechs have come in, and you could argue they have won the front end game. Like, the ease of use, flipping from an Amazon, flipping from a Facebook or a TikTok over to a fintech is much more aligned with what you would experience with a bank. So take that aside, then what does a bank offer? They offer a product. And interestingly enough, over the past few years, the fintechs have mostly been the front end, and then using a white label bank as a front or the back end regulated product provider. But the banks haven't really leaped on to come and innovate on a product standpoint? What do they actually present to both either a fintech or to their own customers? And so I think where we're coming from is the opportunity to essentially innovate on the propositions and the pricing models that banks can actually give to their customers. Like literally, they can tailor this to a segment of one. And guys, what I'm talking about is I'm in the market for a loan. That's what banks typically hear and cater towards. But in reality, I'm in the market for a house. And a house is not a loan. A house is the loan plus the legal fees. I also have to set up my home IoT. I also have to see what my Netflix subscription is going to be like. Do I have to transition that over? There are a ton of things that can actually be a part of a proposition that is priced out and essentially provided by the bank. That's what we're thinking about from an innovation standpoint. There are multiple things that can be done differently, and it's not just a loan. That's just a commodity product.
And I think Chris hit on an interesting point about fintechs, because I think at one point there was a lot of talk about, oh, the fintechs are going to take over banking and traditional banks are going to go away and it's going to all be these unicorn fintechs. And I think what's actually transpired, and Chris, I think you hit on this, is that the fintechs are very good at thinking about kind of the art of convenience and dialing into customers and creating kind of very intuitive interfaces and kind of, you know, that, let's just call it more born in the cloud type of technology. But they don't have a banking license. They don't have core banking systems. They don't have a risk and compliance department typically. They don't have the deep expertise that a lot of the banks have. And so what I think a lot of the fintechs realized over the last 5 to 10 years is that, yes, they're very good at some of the front end stuff and some of the customer facing pieces, but they don't have all the other pieces needed to actually run a bank type of company or service. And so a lot of the fintechs end up actually partnering with the traditional banks and working with them as opposed to working against them. And now I think we're kind of seeing this confluence of both traditional banks and fintechs working together. And also I think the banks have really up-leveled their game as it relates to technology and innovation. So now I think, you know, both of them are kind of spurring innovation across the overall industry.
Yeah, I think again, you're spot on, because what we've actually seen is that fintechs have kind of innovated in a very small part of financial services. And there may be lots of them, but they generally don't overlap on the banking side. Yes, the neobanks have arrived as well. And that's a full-on, head-on competition. But, you know, at the same time, even the neobanks don't have the same product breadth that banks have. So actually, you know, it's been interesting to see that fintechs have been much more complementary than competitive.
Exactly.
I mean, just switching back to customer experience, Chad, what do you think makes a lasting customer experience? Like, how do we get beyond just, you know, something that, oh, this is quite nice, you know, it simplified this one little bit. The screens look fantastic. How do we get to something that's, you know, there for life, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I there's a lot of things that are coming to mind here, so I better speak before I forget them all. But I think number one is consistency. You have to start with consistency across all the different channels. If you call into the contact center, you talk to the branch and they're not exchanging notes and you're starting from zero each time, you've lost customer interest. So I think it starts with consistency. That's almost like table stakes across all the different channels. Number two, I would say, is probably really hyper-personalization. And what I mean by that is really personalizing products and services that beyond just my broader demographic, you know, beside the fact that a white male who's in his 50s who lives in Seattle. Okay, that's table stakes. Understand me, understand my interests, understand, you know, where I'm trying to go with my financial plan, understand my household, not at a creepy level, but at more at a financial level. Understand me as a true individual. So I kind of just maybe call that, you know, hyper-personalization / personal banking. Number three, I think, is sincerity. And integrity. Come to me with offers that actually match my needs. Don't just send me a bunch of, you know, junk and, you know, emails and things in the mail and texts that have no relevancy to me and, you know, this kind of pray and spray approach. You know, that really annoys me as a customer. If you're going to really treat me as an individual, then show that not you understand me, but also don't bother me with all that noise. I don't need to take time to look and figure out if it's something I should evaluate or not. The last thing I would say is look into the future and anticipate my needs. You know, I mean, there's banks that I work with, and I'm not going to mention them, that have done really good jobs of actually kind of opening my eyes into areas that I hadn't even thought about from a financial planning or a financial standpoint, because I did something else with them, or I bought another product, or I went and talked to one of, you know, the relationship managers or the branch manager, and they said, "What, have you ever thought about this? You know, I noticed that you're doing this, or I noticed that you have this kind of pattern. I noticed that you're planning for college." You know, anticipate, help me, help educate me, help me see things that I can't see. And if you can do that, then, you know, you probably have me as a customer for life. So those are the three or four things that I would say are really critical.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I kind of picked up in between all of that is this thing about, like, personalization is also what you don't say to the customer, what you don't send to them as well. Because, mm-hmm. you know, as you say, my life is full of clutter. And if you make it more cluttered, you're going to annoy me. So actually, exactly. you know, filtering some stuff out is a really good form of personalization. I've never really thought about it as personalization. So fantastic.
A very good point.
Great. Over to you, Chris. I mean, from your perspective, you've been helping banks already, you know, with their customer experiences through Zafin. Can you tell us a bit about that? And also, you know, from that, tell us what you think, you know, drives a lasting customer experience.
So many things to decompose there, Dharmesh, and let me just go through them. So as banks come to the realization that they need to innovate from a proposition, a pricing standpoint, pricing model standpoint at speed, the first thing that happens then is you get lines of business owners at the banks going and knocking on the door of the chief information officers and saying, "How can I do that?" And the answer typically is, come back in 12 to 18 months and I'll give you a new product. That is unacceptable. So now the question is, you need to modernize your stack and decompose that to enable the bank to actually innovate from a product and pricing standpoint. And that's exactly where we come in. So what we've observed from our customers is they go from that experience to completely modernizing the approach to how innovation is done at a bank from front to back. And that entails decomposing the older cores, extracting what is the pricing product and pricing components out of them, and enabling the bank to, at the front end, start to really do product management in a way that is product management and not project management of IT resources. That's essentially where we come in. And the important fact in all this is now, with the advent of AI, is how can we at that front end help product managers to distill mass and vast amount of data sets and information in such a way that it's easy for them to understand, okay, this is now my new cohort. This is what I'm going to propose to them. And this is the reason why. Now let's go into the execution engine and actually execute this. That will lead towards, once you start to look at the opportunity out there in terms of integrating many, many data sources that could inform the eligibility and the suitability of product and pricing for a person, that will take that customer experience to a completely new level. I'll give an example. Like, where we're at today is I'm banking with a major Tier 1 bank that does not use Zafin. I recently deposited a large amount of money. This was 6 months ago. I have received absolutely not a single call nor a single proposition for this is what you should do with that. Nothing. Take it to the extreme to say vast amount of data. I have a house. A house is essentially a pipeline. It's in and out of data. It's a dwelling with ins and outs of data. Banking is just one data. You've got hydro, you've got gas, you've got so many pipes. Those pipes just have data. if you connect data sources into the eligibility and suitability rules, now you can suddenly affect positive outcomes for somebody financially, even with other data sources. Do you want to reduce your energy bill? Do you want the so many things that can come together in a banking proposition that actually positively even potentially affect ESG outcomes? Like literally banking can be completely different when you start to think about it from a visionary standpoint. That for me would be the ultimate way that banking would happen. It's where the bank falls away. It becomes invisible because it's intricate to how you manage your full life. And that's every single pipeline that comes in and out to you, to your house, to your family and loved ones.
You know, what you've made me do is actually rethink some of what I kind of think I understand about customer experience, because actually what you're really saying is that if you get the employee experience right, so they can launch products quickly and personalize to the customer, then that's a natural way of the customer experience themselves, you know, improving. So I really like this whole point about improving the product manager's life kind of experience to get to the customer, you know, to get the right product to the right customer at the right time. It's a really good point, Chris.
And it's not just about product managers, right? There is this virtuous cycle between an empowered employee or an empowered banker and a happy customer, right? So the more that you can give the bankers and the employees at banks the information that they need, the more that you can empower them, the more that you can give them the right tools and insights at their fingertips, the better service and higher, to say, quality interactions they're going to have with the customers, yeah. Right? There's nothing more frustrating, not even just for a product manager, for a teller, for a relationship manager, for a branch manager, nothing more frustrating than to have to do tedious administrative task or not having the right information at your fingertips, and that prevents you from better serving your customers, right? And at the end of the day, bankers want to serve their customers. So there is that kind of virtuous loop between the two.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it in lots of banks that I've come across where, you know, actually, you know, the staff really want to do the best by the customer, but they just don't have access to the data or the systems in one place. They typically are, you know, control alt tab to the next window to try and work out what is right for this customer, because their products live in different systems. I mean, I think that's got to be a major challenge, mm-hmm. right, for most banks, because most cores are handling, you know, different products.
And that's where I think, you know, Gen AI can really be a game changer, right? Because Gen AI can really reduce a lot of those administrative, tedious, laborious tasks. And, you know, Gen AI can, you know, give kind of the bankers the insights they need at their fingertips, and, you know, give them more flexible tools. And Gen AI can even help from a product and pricing standpoint. I know Zafin and you know, team over there are looking at how they can apply Gen AI from a product and pricing standpoint. There's some really interesting things that can be done. I mean, I'll just give you one example here. I'm not going to put, you know, Chris or Zafin on the spot, but, you know, traditionally mortgages come in 3 or 4 different flavors. You got the, you know, the variable interest rates, you have the, you know, the 3 to 5 year variables, you have the 30 year, you have the 15 year, and maybe you'll have a, you know, a 10 year. But let's say I have some specific life events where in 13 years or 17 years from now, I want a mortgage, and it doesn't meet the round numbers of a 30 or 20 or 15. Maybe Gen AI could somehow dynamically look at different types of mortgages and terms and say, you know what, for this customer, let's offer them a special 17-year mortgage because it aligns to the retirement date of this individual, and their, you know, income is going to change. And at that point, they want to have everything paid off by that point. I mean, just being more flexible and kind of creative in the approach, right? And that's where I think there's a lot of promise to be had.
Oh, I like that. I like that very much. Chris, what's your perspective on Gen AI and how it could help both employees and customers?
We're already doing it, Dharmesh. So,
we've
integrated Azure AI into our front end solution, which effectively what it does is it goes out and looks at the totality of the product set and the price points and the composition of the product suites within different competitive banks, and distills the information for a product manager at a other singular bank to say, okay, now that I have all this information, and before that would have been done by vast streams of data and analyzed by data scientists, but this has been essentially using Azure AI to distill that information and make it palatable for a product manager to consume. And then to enable them via a proposition canvas to craft what would be that next proposition for a target market. We're already doing that. Then our execution engine is where essentially you just build it out and it goes to market. This is how flexible and how fast you can do this. And we're incorporating Gen AI. One thing we should not forget about, and that's a crucial thing for banks and always comes up in conversation, is everything around security. And so that's when everybody starts knocking on the door and saying, well, what about security? Where is this all hosted and how is it done? And so that's where we come in and say, look, we've chosen, in this case, Microsoft, as our singular partner for cloud, where we run the Zafin SaaS. And so what else can you ask for? Any single bank out there, every single bank in the world is using Microsoft in some way, shape, or form. And that's why we've leaned on to the Azure stack. So that's the level of security that we're providing to the banks for this.
And we certainly appreciate that partnership with Zafin. And as many people know, Zafin is one of the leading, you know, product and pricing lifecycle management companies in the market today. And that's why we're partnering together, right? I think we both have a leadership position in our respective area. And we're very excited about some of the things that Zafin is doing as it relates to product and pricing and taking kind of Azure Open API and applying some of the Gen AI capabilities to their product offering. You know, from Microsoft's standpoint, we pretty much bet the house on Gen AI, right? We are 100% convinced that this is kind of the next, you know, paradigm shift in technology. And we are throwing all of our weight behind it. We're trying to work with, you know, strong, independent technology vendors like Zafin to further kind of complement and extend our capabilities. The one thing I will say, though, is as much as we're excited about Gen AI and we really, you know, created a wide stream of Gen AI capabilities across our product suite and all of our Copilot products. And don't get me wrong, we are super excited about that. But specific to banking, there is a little bit of a different level of concern, or how shall I say, not so much concern, but I guess, yeah, maybe extra consideration that you need to apply.
Yeah.
And that is as it relates specifically to kind of financial products and compliance and regulation and equity. And so when you think about Gen AI is a great tool for, you know, streamlining tasks and, you know, creating, doing dynamic proposals and doing, you know, kind of maybe supporting sellers and supporting customers and, you know, so many interesting things you can do with Gen AI. But the one area we have to be a little more careful about is not necessarily using Gen AI as the chief decision maker. It can be an enabler. It can be a tool. It can help both customers and banks, but it shouldn't necessarily be making the final decision. It should be part of that process. And part of that is, you know, just to make sure that there are no biases or any other things that are in LLMs that are being used as part of that Gen AI solution. So for banking, that's probably a little more, you know, specific than some of the other industries where they may not have that issue. So it's very powerful and we are 100% behind it in Microsoft, but it has to be used in the right way.
Yeah. I mean, you're spot on, because in the UK, I can tell you, we had reams of banks being fined for mis-selling products, right? And this was because, you know, branches and bank staff were being targeted with heavy, you know, kind of incentives to kind of push products, and they were being sold, right? But the due diligence wasn't being done. And so some of the things that I'm seeing in the Gen AI space is this kind of like little coach that sits in the background listening to the conversations that staff are having and just flashing up a little prompt, say, oh, don't forget to ask that, you know, what their risk appetite for risk is. Oh, don't forget to ask, you know, certain bits of information that gets them to a compliance cell as well. I mean, I think that's fantastic, you know.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of good that Gen AI can do. I mean, you know, just think about financial education, right? There's some general kind of cut and dry things about financial products people just don't understand. You could use Gen AI as almost like an intelligent trainer or tutor. Say, hey, you know, here, did you know within 30-year fixed mortgages, you need to be aware of this? Or, you know, hey, were you aware for savings and checking products, you should be aware of this? Or, hey, as you're planning for, you know, college or, you know, having kids, you should be thinking about these things. So, you know, there's a lot of good to be had as well. It just needs to be, you know, Janae needs to be focused in the right areas.
That's why, just to add, guys, the application of AI in our own stack is literally at the front end for distilling information. The actual creation of the rules is done in the execution engine within Zafin. And the more important piece of the whole thing is that one aspect that we elevate and we allow banks to do in an integral way is to demonstrate that the rules, one, there hasn't been bias, number two, that the rules have been created in such a way that you can extract a log and understand why you, Chad, for one product got a different price than you, Dharmesh, for the exact same product. That's one key aspect that banks struggle with today, and that's why you see so many consent orders, or mostly because they cannot demonstrate why they peddled so much product out and they gave different prices to each one of these people. And so that is held today, and nothing against Microsoft, but it's held on Excel spreadsheets within the bank. That is not the way to go to do that from a regulatory standpoint. And that's where we come in, right? So it's distinguishing where you use and be creative, but at the same time, be intelligent of how you actually apply AI to banking is crucially important.
Yeah. And then one more thing, and I'll just mention it to Gen X. I don't want to go too far down the tangent, but there's a lot of benefit for customers too. If you just think about, yeah, you know, the typical kind of account onboarding process or the KYC process, know your customer process, right? At banks, these are very laborious, multi-departmental, you know, processes where the customer's learning, saying, yeah, now you need to do this, verify that, send us this information. And these things, from a customer standpoint, are very frustrating because we're so used to this kind of world of convenience, right? And you're always thinking, why does it take this long? Why are there so many steps? Why do I have to wait for this verification or that verification? And thinking about Gen AI and kind of using some of the capabilities and the workflow and the orchestration and the dynamically providing information and kind of connecting departments, you know, just so much benefit had. And you think about just a typical home mortgage process, you know, from the pre-authorization to the income and tax verification and to the discussion around rates and terms and the appraisals and all the closing documents. Once again, a whole nother process that could really be streamlined using Gen AI. So I do think there's a lot of benefit for customers in Gen AI. It's not only for the banks. There's also a potential benefit for the customers as well.
You almost go back to the story that you sort of hear on multiple levels whereby, hey, I'm a customer of the bank. I'm going to get a new product and I have to fill out this form and they're asking me things that they already know about me. What's my age, when I was born and all. Like, what the hell? You guys, you know this information. Then they ask me, what other products do you have at the bank? Like, why do I have to answer this when you already know this?
Right. Exactly. Very frustrating.
Yeah. It is amazing. I mean, I remember the first time it was a long time ago that I worked in a branch, but it just amazed me how that, you know, from a branch, back in those days, this was like, you know, 30 years ago, we still had, you know, signature cards, we verified checks within the branch until that was all automated. But I still remember like coming back into IT and then thinking, oh my gosh, but you know, this is just, you know, this is a makeover that the branch staff are doing that, you know, everything is integrated. Whereas actually, you know, they personally know the customer. They're putting the pieces together themselves, right? Yeah. But how does that work in another branch? Well, it doesn't. That was the problem, right? So your experience was really down to the individuals that you got. And if you got your favorite teller, then she knew or he knew all about you and you got a great experience, but that wasn't scalable, I guess. And this is the power of what's possible with the technology is that we can pull the data together and give that compelling experience. So, look, it's been fantastic talking to you guys. And I have actually learned a lot and especially love the point about, you know, employee experience, kind of driving the customer experience, you know, and, you know, making them everlasting. So really great to have you on the show, guys. Appreciate you a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great talking to you. Good seeing you, Chris.
You too.